welcoming to the stage, Laura Hobaker.
Jail. The cell was small and everything was orange, that sickly orange of a push-up pop. The cement floor, the metal bed, the toilet, the ceiling, the pipes in the ceiling, the iron bars, the brick wall, everything was painted this awful color orange, except in the middle of the brick wall, right in front of me, was one flamingo pink brick. Why was it there? Some kind of psychological torture? I mean, there was nothing to look at, no one to talk to, nothing to do except stare at this one pink brick. I was alone in a jail somewhere, I didn't even know where, staring at the pink brick and just thinking, oh my God, how did I end up in jail? Me, Miss 4.0, Girl Scout till she was 18 years old. Never got in trouble a day of her life. No tickets, not even any parking tickets. I was in college and I hadn't had a single beer because I wasn't the legal drinking age yet, and that would be wrong. Me, that girl, in jail. It was March 20th, 2003. I don't know if this date means anything to anybody here, but that was the night that George W. Bush officially went to war in Iraq. I was an 18-year-old art student, and I would like to say that I went to the big anti-war protest at Daley Plaza for the noble reasons of peace and love and being anti-war. But I didn't know I was there because I followed a boy. Yeah, my work crush. He was a bohemian wandering poet type, you know, that guy who's like kind of a cross between James Dean and a homeless person. And at work, he asked me if I was going to the big protest, which I of course was not planning on going to. I was gonna like go home and maybe watch High Fidelity with my sister. But as soon as he asked me if I was going, of course I was going. Are you kidding? I was gonna find him there. It was gonna be awesome. And then I got to Daley Plaza and there was like a kajillion people there. I never found my wandering poet boy. There was this electric energy though, I remember that. There was this current of sort of anger and excitement in the crowd. Protesters were like getting all 1968 up in there, like standing on medians and like getting in the faces of the mounted police that were patrolling the swarm. Maybe it was mob mentality, maybe it was just knowing that so many people were so pissed off about the war, but eventually the numbers just got too big to be contained by the plaza and things started spilling out onto the street. I was a really naive 18-year-old kid. I remember thinking, wow, this is like so cool. Like the city's letting us march for peace like this. This is so awesome. It wasn't until the march took a turn through Grant Park and started down Lakeshore Drive. 10,000 protesters weaving between the rush hour traffic, chanting and holding up peace signs. That's when it occurred to me, maybe this wasn't so legal. Then the protest took a turn down Chicago Avenue, heading straight for Michigan. And all of a sudden, everything came to a sudden halt. Blocking our way was the scariest thing I had ever seen in my life. A full battalion of Chicago police in full riot gear. Gas masks, shields, batons, paddy wagons, and flashing lights and police barricades were set up at the intersection, and the sidewalk was packed, like St. Patty's Day packed. We tried to turn around only to find another battalion of police in riot gear coming around the corner. They totally flanked us in this little half block stretch of Chicago right by the water tower. I got totally crushed. I mean, it was like a mosh pit, and I got crushed onto the north sidewalk back against the water tower, surrounded by this group of really tall college guys who were like super protective of me because I was the only girl. We were on that street for over an hour. The guys around me, they were like, oh no, don't worry, they're gonna call to disperse. And I kept waiting for it, because I was gonna disperse the hell out of there. But it never came. It never came. There was no call to disperse, and all of a sudden this one group of protesters sat down in the middle of the street, and I guess that's sort of the universal sign to start arresting people, because that is exactly what happened. The two police lines started moving toward each other, just arresting people as they went. And it occurred to me, watching this line of police move ever closer, that nobody in my entire life knew where in the world I was. So I called my sister. No answer. Called my parents' house. Nothing. Police line, again, is like coming closer and closer and closer. Called my sister again. No answer. Nobody answers their friggin' phones. The police line is now only about 25 feet from where I stand. One of my collegiate protectors pulls out a pack of Camels and starts handing it out. Last smokes, everybody, last smokes. We know what's about to happen. And now the police line is 15 feet away. I just, through the cigarette smoke, I can see the face of my arresting officer. I can see him. He's looking right at me. He's one of those classic Chicago cops, a big hulking guy with like an overhanging brow. I give my sister one last call. It rings twice, and for the love of God, she answers it. Hello? Jen? Jen? Laura? Where are you? I'm at the protest. My cop and I, looking at each other, he's approaching. No way, my sister says. She's totally oblivious. The big one downtown, we're watching that on the news right now. There's like a helicopter. Oh, yeah, there's a helicopter. So anyway, cop approaching 10 feet away, 9 feet away, 8 feet away. I think he's reaching toward me. Yeah, I'm totally gonna get arrested. Tell mom and dad, bye. Do all the arrest stuff that you hear about. Except Miranda rights. Apparently that's not a thing they actually have to do. But I did get handcuffed, and I got to ride in a paddy wagon, and I got a mugshot. I got strip searched. Ugh, it was the worst. My arresting officer's ID was written in permanent ink on this arm, and my prisoner ID was written in permanent ink on this one. I was escorted to my orange cell where I sat alone for many hours, staring at that friggin' pink brick that was driving me crazy. Then footsteps down the hall. An officer leads in this very slight girl into my cell. She's mid-20s. She is my Republican dad's like worst nightmare of a liberal hippie chick. She has dreads and like a long skirt. Her name is Jessica. She doesn't say anything, she just sits in the corner. But remember, Jessica is going to be important. The cell block does slowly fill up with girls from the protest, and things were actually a little jovial once everybody got in there. My fellow protesters to this day, they sit in my memory as floating voices through the wall, because I never know what any of them looked like. They would like lead sing-alongs of, I fought the law and the law won. We'd been told that we were just going to be held for a couple hours while our background checks went through, so you know, things were pretty light. We were just waiting for background checks. No big deal. And then came the terrible news. This big, hulky boss man cop comes in, puts his hands on his hips. Well, ladies, Mayor Daley's real pissed at Alia. Yeah. And nobody is getting out of here till noon tomorrow. Noon tomorrow? There was silence on the sublock. No more sing-alongs. Noon tomorrow, I leaned my forehead against the bars. For the first time, I really feel my confinement. I can't just walk through the door. I am forced against my will in this terrible orange cell with this hippie dreadlock girl who, for all I know, is a drug addict. I remember. With the bars in my head, I remember my middle school field trip that we took to the local police station. I remember our police lady tour. She guides us and shows us the jail cells. And me and my classmates all huddled together on the other side looking in at those cells. That's where bad people go. And I imagine from my cell now, that group of 12-year-olds looking at me. She's a bad person. Oh my God, my parents. They were gonna murder me. Oh my God, this was the worst trouble I'd ever been in. Oh, this was the worst night ever. Hey, you cool? From the corner, Jessica, the hippie.
So,
what's up? You all right? Fine, I'm just claustrophobic, I guess. Hey, it's cool. We'll be out of here in no time. No problem. Oh, so you've been arrested before? Well, no. But, like, this is no biggie. I mean, it's anti-war protesting, you know? Badge of honor. So me and Jessica, we started talking then. At first, it was just to stave off my wallowing despair at being in jail. But then it was just a way to pass the time. And then it sort of turned into a way to forget that I was in jail, because Jessica was a very interesting girl. I mean, she had just come back from teaching English in Poland. I had never heard of this before in my life. What, you can go and teach English in other countries and they like pay you to do that? They pay you to like travel around the world? That's so cool. And she was full of some really amazing stories. Part of me kind of dug the idea. I mean, I liked language, I liked travel. Maybe that was something that I could do one day. I would remember this conversation much later, after I spent 20 more hours in jail with her. After I got out, my mom having paid my $100 bail, that phone call to Jen, she told mom. After I went to court to face my charges, which were officially blocking a fire lane. And after I got over my crush on that bohemian hobo boy, after I finished school, I would decide after graduation I was gonna do like Jessica. I was gonna do a gap year and spend a year abroad teaching English. And I was so enamored with her descriptions of Eastern Europe that I went to Prague, and I loved it. I even got TEFL certified. I came back, I taught ESL in Chicago. I, last weekend, just graduated with my master's in linguistics TESOL from UIC. And I also just got accepted for a Fulbright to study language and teach English in Poland. Yeah. It's the same country, the very same country that Jessica told me about all those years ago in that orange jail cell. I never even found out Jessica's name. I didn't exchange emails with her. I never got her phone number. I don't know her last name at all. I have no idea what she's doing right now. We were just two strangers who happened to meet in a jail cell that night. But now, looking back at it, I can see she was like one of the important people in my life. Like, my life was going in one direction, and that night in the jail cell, listening to Jessica, it split on the path that I'm on right now. I have a career because I got arrested. I've traveled the world because I got arrested. I'm a Fulbright scholar. dollar because I got arrested. Sometimes the worst night of your life can turn out to be the best. Yeah.